Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoor Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Well, I'm in the studio. It is pitch black outside. No, it is not the evening. It is the early morning because I happen to be that morning, man. I woke up a little extra early this morning, probably excited about going into the studio. Woke up about 4 this morning. It's now about 5:30-ish. And I'm here to talk about the life of an environmental scientist. You know, I do many assemblies as I travel across the country, but the assemblies to me, they're shows. It is showtime when you're on stage, and I show up with props of kayaks and fly rods and so many different things, puppets and so. But when I can get into a classroom and do some real live teaching, that's what it's all about. So very recently, I was in a classroom, environmental science students, they were all juniors in high school, and they were able to really absorb what I was saying, ask some good questions, and give some good answers, because it's not just me speaking. It's like, let me, and I joke with them, and I'm saying, hey, look, try. Hey, if you're wrong, I said, I'll make fun of you, and then I'll give you the right answer. And obviously, I'm not going to make fun of them, but it's just to put a smile on their face. But when I first start, I call it the hook. You need to have the hook, so whether you're on stage or when you're in a classroom, that right away, everyone is going to be listening to you. So I said, let me tell you about my grizzly bear research. But I said, let me tell you what it's like to be an environmental scientist in the top of the Rockies. And then I share this story with them. True story. You're walking along top of the Rockies. You're at 11,000 feet. It's 70 degrees. It's late July. You got a t-shirt, pair of shorts on. But you got your backpack, the huge research gear backpack with everything I need to survive. And I'd see a huge large cumulonimbus cloud rising up over the next mountain. And as quick as you can drop your backpack, put all your winter gear on, and in 5 minutes, it is snowing like mad on top of you. 15 minutes later, the sun is out. It's back to 70 degrees. You're putting your t-shirt and short backs on, and you're hiking in, 2 inches of snow. And I share that with them because that's the hook, because they're listening and going, man, that, and by the way, I'm saying to them, that's cool. It really is a cool thing. The saying in Montana, by the way, is if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it'll change. And then I ask them a simple question. I was doing this in the classroom on the East Coast. And I said, are there grizzly bears on the East Coast? And most kids, yeah. I said, nah. So again, learning point, and it's okay to be wrong. And I want them to know that, hey, you could try. It's okay to be wrong. And then we speak about where we find grizzly bears. And we talk about the black bears that are here. And then I pull out a mandible, the lower jaw of a black bear that a wolf from my wolf research had taken down. And I pull it out and I begin to show them the teeth. And I said, okay, what kind of ivore? And I always say it that way because omnivores, carnivores, herbivores. I said, what kind of ivore is a bear? And they start giving me, and most, it wouldn't matter whether I was speaking to adults or children. Most of them say, they eat meat. No. Let's take a look at their mandible. Their mandible, just like yours. And I said, I'm not going to look into your mouth. No, I'm not a dentist. But I could tell what kind of animal you are. So let's look at the bear. And they could see those big incisors. And right away, they're going, meat. I go, well, okay. So how many are there? There's only one here. I said, okay, what about the rest of the teeth? Oh, they're flat. Well, what are they for? Plants. I said, yeah, they're for grinding. I said, so a bear is going to eat more plant than he is animal. And then I explained, because I asked him a question, so what is he? What kind of ivore? Then they agree he's an omnivore. Omni means both. He eats plant and animal. And then I call him, and this is my own terminology, I always call him the 80-20 omnivore, because they're eating 80% plant, 20% animal. Because I give this example, but it makes sense. A black bear standing there looking at a white-tailed deer and a patch of blueberries. And I say, what don't you want to use a lot of in nature? Because if you use a lot, you have to go get more. And they think, and the answer is energy. Well, if I chase the white-tailed deer, I'm going to use lots of energy. I really understand that blueberries, they don't run fast. Since blueberries don't run fast, hopefully there's a smile on your face, then I should go after those. And I will let them know, it doesn't matter whether it's a grizz or a black bear. When they get into the side of a mountain, it could be a state park, national forest, doesn't matter what it is, and I'm saying the entire side of a mountain, if it is covered in blueberries, they will stay there and they will eat every single blueberry. So, you know how, and this is always my description in class, where it's Thanksgiving and you go, I can't eat another thing. And then somebody says, I got dessert. And then magically a space opens up inside your belly. Well, with that being said, then all of a sudden the bear will eat as many as he could. Then as a day bed, lays down right next to his food source, not really protecting it, but once again, not wanting to use lots of energy. Why would I go far from the source? And when he is up a half hour later, goes, I got a little bit more room, and starts munching again. And it doesn't matter what it took, depends on the size. If it took days or weeks, they will eat every single blueberry on the side of the mountain. And then one kid said, he goes, what about the bear's poop? What's it look like? And I said, oh, animal scat. And then I explained that scat is a word of scientists. That's what we use. And I explained that I can work backwards, that if I know what the scat is, so I could look inside the scat, and right away people are going, oh my goodness, that's gross. I said, no, no, no. I said, not with my hands. I said, but if I can look inside the scat, then I could see what he's eating, then I could find the bear. So I work backwards from the back end, and then they get a little smile on their face because they understand what the back end is. Now, I gave him another story because you know what? Stories tell so much about nature. And I said, look, this is something I never read about. This is something I was never told about. I gave him a story, true one. I'm at the top of the Rockies. We're done with the research for the evening. And I am looking down into a valley below, and it looked manicured like a golf course. So with the other scientists, I labeled it the golf course. And in that valley is a meadow. There were all the elk. It was a nursery. It was the cows, the moms, and the calves, the babies. And there were just probably about 100 of them, and they're out there feeding early evening. And then all of a sudden, and I mean in a sudden, the most amazing thing occurred. You saw all of the cows complete a circle with their heads facing out, tucking all the calves in behind them. And I describe it, it was, if you ever seen a down lineman in football where he's got one hand down and somebody's going to call hike and he's going to come out. They were all like these down linemen tucked in behind them, all of their calves inside a real tight circle. Think about this. We get to about 100, but all tucked in. And over the little hill comes two coyotes. And the two coyotes, well, hey, it was their job. They are, and I asked students, they are, oh, they're carnivores. Well, they want one of those calves. So one of them would stalk up nice and slow. And I talk about tracking and stalking. And I said, hey, I said, right away, when you hear the word stalking, you're thinking about humans and you're thinking about bad things. Well, this is how animals get close to their prey. If you're a predator animal, you stalk. And one of the coyotes would get probably, I'd say, about maybe 30 feet away, 40 feet away. And one of those cows would come racing out, like charging like a lineman, right? And the coyote would run off. And the coyotes, one at a time, they tried this, you know, here, there. And every time a cow would come running out, chasing him. And then after a while, the coyotes realized, hey, I'm going to have to use a real lot of energy to get some food. And they went off. Just a real neat thing to see. And again, you share that story, you could see their eyes are bulging because, again, it's just something really cool to hear. And hey, I've said this to other scientists and they're going, no way. Yeah, yeah. And again, you need to be there to see it. But if you remember, the title is, what's the life of an environmental scientist in the field? And then you go, oh, those are the cool things that I get to see. I then shared a little bit about my summer research, which was on wolf research. You see, we have so much research about wolves in the winter because wolves are designed to chase down prey in the wintertime. You know, we have all these great photos of wolves. And if I was, and I always joke, if I was to put a wolf on a table and just rip off all of his fur, and people go, what are you doing? And then you would look and you'd see these extra long legs that you don't see because of all the fur that's on them, and these monstrous paws. And you go, what are they for? And what I do is I take out a pair of my snowshoes. And right away, no exaggeration, if you're in a city or suburb, just about every kid has, they've never seen a pair of snowshoes. And I'll say, what are these? And many of them have no clue. And I explain snowshoes. Then I explain about the wolf's paws. The reason why they're so large is they're made for running up on top of the snow, like snowshoes. And I talk about how it displaces your weight. You can stay up top. And then I said, if they break into the snow, their long legs are there to pop out of the snow to get them back on top. Because if they're chasing down a whitetail or they're chasing down an elk, their big old hooves keep cracking and breaking the snow and down. So they have a difficult time running in the snow, whereas the wolf is running up on top. So they are designed for it. So my research in the summer, less research because it is more difficult to track the wolves. And I was in the barrier water region, Minnesota, and you know, Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes. It is water. It is marshes, bogs, fens, swamps, every bit of wetlands that is there. And it is, number one, really cool to track them in that time. And I shared this story because, once again, stories get them like zoned into what we're speaking about. And I said, when we land in the airport, scientists were getting picked up in a van. We're getting driven because I explained that, you know, grizzly bear research, backpack, your tent on you. You're living at a tent. And I explained the cool things about that. I said, but we're going to get to stay in a log cabin. So like we're going to be like the rich and famous, just like leisurely in a cabin to come home to sleep. But while the van was taking us there, I happened to be sitting in the front seat. I see, you all know what a stop sign looks like. I see these tiny stop signs on these tiny poles that are about 3 feet off the ground. And I'm looking at them and passing another one. I'm going, what? In my mind, what the heck is this, man? And then I said to the driver, I said, excuse me. I said, are there like clown cars down here where all the, you know, you ever seen the circus where all the clowns come popping out of the car? I said, because I see these little stop signs. He goes, snowmobiles. And then I go, ah, see, in the wintertime, these roads are impassable. There's that much snow. So that gets back to the wolves and why they're good at tracking, chasing down animals. And I said, so the kids in school ride snowmobiles to school, teachers, snowmobiles, attorneys, put on your suit, put on your snowsuit, 20 below zero, and off you go. And I give them that. And they have this picture in mind then why wolves are so good at chasing down. And they realize, hey, they're carnivores, chasing down their prey in the snow, designed so well. And then we begin to discuss pack dynamics. Well, what is the size of a pack? And I said, well, okay, so what would determine that? And in one of the classes, one kid said, well, I guess it depends on the size of your food. I said, yeah. I said, so what kind of food? And then we began to speak about moose and elk and whitetail. And obviously, the larger the animal, the larger your pack could be. So they learned a little bit about that. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Now, one of the next things I said, let's get into the water. And they go, what? I said, yeah, let's go for a swim. I said, let's talk about trout. And right away when I said trout, they thought salmon. And they said, oh, bears eat them. I said, well, I said out west, and I explained about in Alaska specifically when they're trying to put on their fat, and I explained that the salmon are running. I said, we call it running, but they're really swimming, which makes sense. And then I said, no, let's just talk about a brook trout here in the east. And then I said, they're looking for three things. And one person said, they got to look for food. I said, well, what do they eat? One girl said, fish. I said, well, yeah, they eat fish, but they primarily feed on something else. And then because I happen to be a fly fisherman, I pulled out a fly box and I explained to them that there are aquatic insects and they go through the same stages that terrestrial insects go through that you all know about. And I explained it and I walked around and then I told them a story. I was speaking to little kids one time and I said, I fly fish. And a little kid said, you mean you fish for flies? I said, no. And I showed them the fly box, the little kids first, and then but in this class. And I said, it's like this. Trout need to eat this, but they're looking for, and I draw on the board, and it looks like a big peace sign. I go, no. I am not talking about peace, love, and grooviness. I said, I am talking about the power of three. I said, if a trout can find these three, then he will be successful in life. I said, he's looking for protection. I said, protection from what? And I asked him a question. And they really don't get, like, what can be going at in their minds. If it's not a bear, what's going after them? And then I explain about a bird of prey called an osprey, just one of them. There are bald eagles that are fishermen, but osprey just love, so I use that one. I said, well, they got to be down deep enough. I said, protection might be a rock in the stream. And that also provides comfort, because then I start to talk to them. I said, if you were in a pool, I said, and you made a whirlpool, and every kid, I said, you ever make a whirlpool? Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, you ever turn around and go the opposite way? Oh, yeah, it's hard. I said, yeah, yeah. I said, well, if you're a fish, you don't want to go against that all the time, so you need something that's going to break up the current. So I just kept using the rock as the example. I said, so now we've got protection, and I put that P in one of the parts of the on the board, the peace sign, which is really one of the triangles. I said, okay, we've got comfort now from the water. I said, and then I explained about how the hatches of insects going on and how that's their food in the third one. I said, so where do we find them? And I walk over and on the board, and in the very center, I draw a little dot. I said, at that intersection, I said, you and I could be fly fishing somewhere, and I could be walking along with you going, fish right there, you're going to catch a fish. And people will go, well, how do you know he's there? Because I found the intersection of the power of three, protection, comfort, and food. I also taught him that we catch and release fish. That's who I am, a catch and release guy. My job is to let you grow up so you can become a bigger fish and a mommy and daddy fish, and things go on. And then we discussed a number of food chain terms, and we spoke about, and it's funny, they know about herbivores, carnivores, omnivores. But I said, where does it start? And with the food chain terms, and many children, I'll even go extend many adults, they'll go, sooner or later, somebody will go to a plant. And I'll go, well, what is a plant called? And they're going, plant. And they start to name plants. I go, no. What is a? And then I give them the term, because most of them do not know it, is a producer. And then we know a producer produces, makes his own food. I said, where does it come from? Oh, the sun. I said, you know, the photosynthesis. And then things in their mind start clicking. Yeah. And then there was a student in the back, and I said to him, he's sitting, I'll give his name as mine. I go, Joey's sitting in the back. I said, hey, Joey. I said, he's sitting by the window there. Wouldn't it be cool if he could just stick his hand out by the window there with the sun out and make some food? And Joey could just simply go, I'm full right now. Well, we can't do that. So, well, I explained that if we as humans eat closer to the source of the sun, there is more energy down there. So when you eat more plants, you get more energy. So herbivores are getting the most energy. Actually, the producers are. But something that's eating them, the herbivores, because there's a transfer, a loss of energy when carnivores eat them or omnivores eat them. And then I said, okay, if something dies, well, what's going to break them down? And they're trying to think, and then I get into the term scavenger and decomposers. And we happen to be, the class I was speaking was close to a mountain range ridge. And I explained to him, I said, you know, all those turkey vultures you see riding off the ridge. And one gal was bright, and she says, well, I see hawks up there too. I said, yes, you do. And I said, here's a migratory path. I said, right now you're getting to see lots of things going by. I said, but let's talk about the turkey vultures. So I share that with them. And then with the food chains, I said, I am going to give you one of the most important facts that you need to know. I said, when you're talking about food chains and drawing them, arrows are drawn in the direction that food, or sorry, the direction that energy travels. I'm supposed to know that, and I do know that. So arrows are drawn in the direction that energy flows. So when you draw it, if an eastern cottontail rabbit is eating a broadleaf plantain, which is a plant, the arrow is drawn to the eastern cottontail because that's the direction energy is flowing. So we discussed that. And then we discussed about food webs are the linking together of food chains. I got into a few other terms that I'm going to share with you in part two of what it's like to be an environmental scientist in the field. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures.
You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.